brought the program so that I'd be sure to get the right one. A number of years ago, a Hindu astrologer in Bombay sent me my horoscope, which he had carefully worked out. He assured me that I would probably pass on around my 65th year, but that my funeral would be magnificent. I kind of wasn't quite prepared for the future, but it crept up on me, and here I still are, doing what I can. Actually, I believe that the last 10 years of life are by far the most important, most interesting, and most significant. But to make them all that they can be, you have to start on them early. The idea of waking up one morning and finding yourself retired does not work out well. So you begin in early life to recognize the responsibility to society. It is part of our duties to carry on a self-supporting program, to have a family, to maintain our part of the responsibilities of society. And this process generally takes us a number of years, so that by the time retirement comes, many persons are psychologically exhausted, badly bored, weary of everything, and with actually very few internal resources with which to do things over one of the most interesting periods of life. It is very important, therefore, that we start early, for those last 10 years have to be fed before they arrive. You cannot work with them just when they occur. Now, to take care of those last 10 years, one of the most important factors is a disciplined life during the working years. There must be a reasonable economy. The individual cannot afford to spend everything. He cannot live up to his salary or his wages every day. If he does not use certain providence, he will wake up at the end, at the beginning of the last 10 years, with nothing to sustain him but Social Security. Now, sometimes it has to be that way. But in many instances, it is the lack of disciplined living. Now, self-discipline is getting to be very unpopular, but it is still one of the most important experiences of human life. Self-discipline helps us to control our dispositions, our appetites, our attitudes. It helps to make us more valuable to other people and more important and significant to ourselves. So discipline can start by the time we get ready to go to school. It can more or less give us a basic program upon which to build. It can point out to us that our career is for a reason, that we are doing something because we have opportunities and responsibilities. And most of all, we have responsibilities to society, and if these are promptly and carefully met, life itself will be far more interesting and important. Too many young people today are starting out bankrupt. They do not even wait till middle life to lose. They lose almost immediately. They live beyond their means from the day they take the first job. They reach a point where they get a little raise and then they have to have a swimming pool. Then they have to move into a larger house. Then they have to do more social entertaining, join clubs, do things of this kind, buy the most expensive furnishings and clothings, lay aside a tidy sum for alcoholic refreshments, and in these days, nearly go into bankruptcy every week on narcotics alone. Now, with this program, if the person lives to those last 10 years that are significant, he will arrive there not only impoverished, but sick, and more or less forgotten and ignored by the people he used to call his friends. So the start is to put aside something for those days when you can enjoy it most and when you would best have it. If, therefore, during the years of work and activity, you can build up at least a moderate financial reserve, then there are many things you can do in your retirement years that otherwise would not be possible. It's not nice to wake up with all kinds of hopes and wishes and no way of satisfying them. Now, it may not be that these activities are the primary purpose in your personal cases, but they have to also play a part, especially in times of inflation. So we start in by planning a life rather than having a series of accidents. We plan it from the beginning. We have some kind of a course we intend to steer. And it is high time that education stepped in and helped us to make this plan a reality. The plan begins probably with the job. It begins with the reason for the education and the specialization that the individual has adapted. There is also in society, however, a mistaken idea, and that is that if you have a certain job or a certain perspective or a certain concept of life, you must live by it and by it alone, all the way. If you're in a banker, you must start and be a banker till the day they put you away. If you are a businessman, the business comes first, second, and last. Now, the one point in life is very hard on advancing years, because in many instances, it cannot be continued. The individual, by circumstances or by the rules of his corporation, must retire. And then he has no other outlets to fall back on. His children are grown, his family are self-sustaining, and if he has spoiled them well, they care very little for him. So what does he do? He goes into these last 10 years more or less disillusioned. He finds himself incapable of simple pleasures. He has no outlets to take the place of this one tremendous surge of energy which he has devoted to his business or his profession. It seems to me, therefore, that every child going to school should have the same kind of basic pattern that we find in certain universities, namely, that you have a major and a minor. You have a major purpose, but you support it with other supporting activities. You may be going to head for law, but you may take a little language and you might take a little art or music along with it. These extra forms, these secondary activities, often build an appetite or a basic frustration within the individual, and retirement brings the opportunity to use these avocational or secondary interests. What is necessary is, therefore, that early life should be used as far as possible to broaden a basis of appreciations, to become aware of the significance of things that most people overlook, and to have a more or less balanced pattern of life. A person reaching middle age should have some attitude, some conviction, some beliefs that are going to help him to face a useful retirement. Without these added values, he's going to have a very dull time, to say the most. Now, when the time comes for the individual to change from his pattern to something else, he may have a choice. Now, if it happens, and it is happening more recently, that the possibility of continuing his present employment for a further length of years is available. The advantages of this, of course, have to do with his income and things of this nature. But also, if he has no other interest, prolonging his natural vocation may keep him alive, may give him a continuity of purpose, for the job disciplines him and makes it necessary for him to keep rules which otherwise he would break and continue contacts which he might otherwise neglect. So if this choice is available and the person has no other interest, then it is probably wise for him to continue a little longer or as many years as he feels he can't handle the situation. I began quite early in life with many avocational interests, and I have found that all of them have contributed to one general attitude toward life. I have so many hobbies I can't even count them. And yet with all of them, there has never been any confusion or interruption in the projects with which I was concerned. These various sidelines are moments of relaxation. They shift the mind into another channel. They relax us away from a dismal, immediate problem. And they also give us constant opportunity to mingle with other persons who have also subsidiary interests. In other words, every hobby is somebody else's major purpose for living. And by cultivating hobbies, we enlarge friendships, we meet interesting people, we come in contact with interesting projects, and in all, we have a fuller and better balanced life. The life that is all one-pointed is not a good one. It doesn't help much. Now, up to recent years, this problem of a monotonous life had very strong interest for women. They had not been generally as active in public affairs or in avocational interests. I know years ago I've asked many, many women what their hobbies were. And most of them have answered instantly, their children. This is an interesting answer, but it is a substitute that is not genuine. Children are not a hobby. Children are something that is very much more significant and very much more permanent as a responsibility. Hobbies you can neglect for a while, children you cannot. Therefore, in the life of a woman, a hobby should not simply be parenthood or marriage. It should be interest in art, music, literature, civic matters, all kinds of outlets by means of which the person develops a balanced attitude toward living. A balanced attitude also strongly conditions an opinion on any particular subject. The individual who is too wound up in themselves has very little interest in other people. The person who has a dogmatic attitude loses association with anyone who will not agree with him. So by degree, intensities overcome the natural tendency to be a social animal. We are not able to meet other people because we have locked ourselves against any ideas that they may have. And as is quite often, our own ideas are very limited, life gets smaller and smaller, and by the time we reach retirement, it is very small indeed. So all the way along, we begin to plan for what we're going to do later. And now, more than ever before, the probabilities of later loom to us as a great and reasonable likelihood. 100 years ago, very few people lived past 60. Then a few of them broke through into 65, and there was a great deal of excitement in the world when population longevity statistics indicated that we had reached the 70 years referred to in the Bible. Now this pattern is much larger and the interest much more widely diffused. Today, the probabilities of reaching not only 70 but 80 are by no means exceptional. And it is quite possible that the average person retiring from business at 65 can have 20 years of life ahead. Assuming that there may be some limitations upon activity, especially in the closing years of this extended life, there is still a tremendous amount of time in which to do important things. Now, what are important things? Well, here again, the personality has much to say with it. I think one of the things that is necessary to all forms of important life is a firm, basic religious conviction. If we believe we are here for a reason, and if we believe that we are here to help each other, And if we believe we are here to be part of the building of a better world, we can face the future with greater enthusiasm than those who have no such internal resources. So a little idealism and a little conviction about the reason for a personal existence, these will help greatly to give strength and purpose to advancing years. Without something of this kind, it becomes comparatively bleak. The next point that I think we should consider is special training as we go along through life. A hobby should be something that disciplines us. It should be something that also contributes to the building of character or to the manifestation of submerged potentials within the person. A hobby which is simply a time killer is not worth having. And probably this is true of a great many people today who spend practically all of their spare time in front of a television set. People doing this are cheating themselves of those years that are coming up, because the individual who has no intention of thinking seriously on any subject is going to reach retirement in a pretty empty condition. It is not the proper thing simply to use relaxation, rest, or vacations simply to waste time, to do things that mean nothing to the individual and may actually prove a detriment to his character. So whatever time we have, whether it be during the working years or in the retirement period, whatever time we have, we should use to do something that is meaningful. Now, this does not mean drudgery. It doesn't mean that we have to go around worrying about the future or something of that kind. It means, however, that we should spend this energy as far as possible helping ourselves to grow up, helping ourselves to be more of ourselves than we were before. That we may call upon latent talents and abilities, that we may strengthen interests and attitudes, that we may correct mistakes of character, that we may train and censor memories. All of these things help to prepare for that time when we should have a very serious and useful span ahead. I've talked to a great many people recently, and most of them say they're tired, that they can't handle any more responsibility. But when they begin to think of their own life as a responsibility that they can't handle, they're going to get into trouble. Most people are not weary, worn out, tired out. They're bored. The things they are doing do not interest them. The projects which they have undertaken, which may have been wrong in the first place, do not come out as they hope, and then there is discouragement. The individual who starts a project should know enough how to finish it, but most people do not. They expect heaven to intercede or miraculous providence to make sure that a business will succeed, even though it is badly managed. So all these problems come into focus in the course of daily living, and they all point their way, little by little, to the time when we have to live with ourselves, when it is no longer possible for us to simply continue making mistakes and forgetting about them. Now, some people feel that memory is aided in older years by simply not being so acute, that a lot of worries and problems are forgotten. That is partly true, but I've observed that, unfortunately, a memory that forgets is most likely to forget the good things first and leave the individual more or less bound into mental habits that are most discouraging. A bad memory can also lead to very serious complications in living, in thinking, and in human relationships. So it is not an escape. It may to some degree be an inevitable indication of advancing years, but it is not something to be cultivated as a means of forgetting problems. They just don't forget that easily. Another problem that we have when we go along is to try to decide what we would do if we could do anything we wanted to do. And this is everyone should think about before they get to 50. What would they do if they could do anything that pleased them? That they could have any type of life that they wanted. within a reasonable possibility or probability. There's no use wishing for something that is impossible, but that fulfillment of something that is attainable, some end that can be reached, this should be under consideration all the way through mature life. Mostly in business today, the person has not the outlets that he really enjoys. He is not doing the things he would most like to do. And that is one of the reasons why we are having so much problem with labor and so much tendency for society, business, and economics to deteriorate. It is because people are not basically keyed to that type of thing. The building of a vast economic empire was not the real reason for human invention or human life. It is something that has been forced upon us by the congestions of populations and the needs for food, clothing, and shelter. So we have to try to find out what is lurking in there. One person I know who did a very good job of it took up watercolor painting at the age of 68, and at 78 won a national prize. Another took up sculpturing past 70 and ended by having permanent pieces in the Luxembourg in Paris. These people had always wanted to do these things but never could do them. The great problem here is, have you ever wanted to do them? Have you ever really wanted to do things sufficiently to train yourself, work for it, use your time and energy for that type of cultivation, rather than what is commonly called relaxation, which is a more or less complete mental and emotional inertia? On this basis, the getting ready for the older years means that you're going to have more and more time to do the things you want to do. One person I knew also was a botanist. Amateur botanist, never got any further than naming and studying. Read several books on botany, enjoyed it very much. And then after two children married and left and went away, and the husband died, this woman became more and more involved in botany. At the same time, however, she had to make a living. So she still held a job, but her heart and soul were in botany. When she was over 70, she began the compiling of a great book on herbal medicines and botany. It wasn't published during her lifetime, but it was later published. And this made a career that was a fulfillment of a great, lengthily held conviction of importance. So everyone can do something that is important if they want to. Now, several people also that I know think of retirement as a period in which they should be entertained in some way. They should be surrounded by interests that are pushed on them, that they should have other people doing things to make them happy, that they should not be forced to make decisions of their own, but should rather go along and let other people carry them to the end of life. This is another failure, because today people just are not willing to help a person who is not willing to do anything on their own accord. It is far better for the individual to help himself than to wait for other people to take care of him. After consideration of this thing, I've kind of gone back and looked myself over a little more to see what was happening. I remember very well that the doctor who brought me in, who I knew as a very small infant, Dr. Lapp, a medical man about 7 feet tall in Canada, who always wore a torn derby hat and smoked a terrible cigar. He looked at me one day and he said, "I don't know how you're going to live or how long you're going to live because of the symptoms and symbols that came in your arrival. A cesarean, prenatal, all this type of thing, glandular complications, other oddments." But he said, "I can tell you one thing, whether you live a long time or not, you're going to be over 6 feet tall." So he was right on that point. And he also was more or less of the type of thinking that where health is not a basic commodity available, where you have to do the best you can with what you have, there is never the feeling that you're going to be a centenarian. It just doesn't seem that way. But I'm waking up now. I'm not a centenarian, and I still don't expect to make it. But I am finding that I have years that I hardly realized I would have. And looking back over them, I realize that these years have been very interesting years. If, for instance, we block out everything before my 65th birthday and say that I have lived certain things since then, I think I've had a very valuable and interesting experience. First of all, I've had things I've always done and always wanted to do that are not forced on me by anyone else, but arising from convictions within myself. Those go on just the same. A doctor I know who had a family practice continued to be in active practice until he was 98 years old. Well, he had a practice that permitted it. He had a job that he could do that way. And I've had a job that I could do my way. But also in the problem, looking it over, I find that has been a great deal of living that has been the most interesting and vital experiences of my life. During this particular period of time, I have made 5 long journeys outside of the country, 3 to Asia and 2 to Europe. During this same period of time, I've advanced every hobby and attitude that I have and have still maintained a regular program of production, best maybe not as fast, not as quickly, but still with reasonable ease. I've enjoyed these years tremendously, and I have seen a lot of dreams that I had come true in these years. If I dropped out, I would never have known whether they came true or not, and if I hadn't had them, there would be no possibility of their working out constructively. So I think there are all kinds of things that people can do and should be doing all the time to make life a constant challenge for growth and greater experience. And these experiences all have something to do with letting out the internal that is within ourselves. I think today, if people realize it, they could be much more valuable to each other if they'd be quiet for a minute and remember what has happened to them and how they handled it and how their friends have met the problems of life. We could all learn from each other, and we can all learn from ourselves, from the mistakes we have made, from the decisions that have affected our characters and careers. There is no reason why the individual shouldn't roll up his sleeves at 70 and say, "Here we go." Because if we are going to live longer, and if we continue to have improved medical facilities, health programs, and Medicare and things of this nature, we should have the integrity to realize that these privileges cost money, and that if we have them and benefit from them, we should contribute to the advancement of society. There is something that we owe when other people go in debt to take care of us. So there is really a very great reason for doing things that are basically important. Now, what can we start with, we'll say, if by some chance we have reached retirement age with no valid program in mind? Well, the first thing to do, I think, if our health is good, is look around and find something that needs doing. Now, there are all kinds of things that need to be done which are not done because financial circumstances will not permit. If we are in a condition where we do not need this financial support other than what we have ourselves, then we can contribute to all kinds of works that need doing, that to help people. And we can find humanity as a hobby, something that is necessary and needed, without consideration for money. I remember when I was growing up, there were some people that did a little babysitting occasionally. And with this babysitting, they never thought of being paid for it. Now, I know a grandmother who babysits for $5 an hour for her own children and grandchildren. It's all on a business basis now. Well, if the person really wants to make a contribution to society and doesn't need financial return, and would only spend it more or less wastefully anyway, here is opportunity to engineer and vitalize innumerable projects that are languishing because financial resources are over-limited. There are all kinds of things that need to be doing. Also, there are all kinds of opportunities for the individual to take the experiences of the past and transmute them into progress for himself and other people. We're living in an age that is changing constantly. Day by day, there are new activities coming into existence. These activities are not miraculously bestowed by heaven, however. They are the result of the gradual development of former situations that were less modern or less active. Therefore, today, each one of us, regardless of age, has the privilege of adjusting our own consciousness to progress. Now, in some cases, this progress may seem a little dubious, and I think there is no doubt in the world that all change is not progress. But there are new things coming along every day that can challenge the mind and can create new areas of interest. And to the last hour we live, we are here to learn. Therefore, every new development of society presents a challenge. And whether we ever intend to do anything about it or not, we should be contemporary to the degree of taking advantage of all facts that are made available in our generation. We cannot simply depend upon those that we held as right and proper 30 or 40 years ago. We must try to understand change. We must try to understand the critical situation the world is in and how it got there. There's no use of just swinging out and cursing someone or something. The problem is to understand, to try to find out. Well, one person said, well, what's the use? I'm going to be dead in 10 years anyway. Why should I understand these things? Well, there's where your philosophy has to come in a little bit and help you out. It may well be that we'll drop the body somewhere along the line, but there's no proof that we'll be dead. There's no proof that we can die. And there's much to recommend the idea that when we leave here, we are better off if we take a group of valuable assets with us. And the only things that we can take with us are our own insights, understandings, and achievements of inner consciousness. We can take with us a disposition we have enriched, a temperament that we have disciplined and trained, an appreciation which makes us constantly aware of the wonderfulness of life itself. These inner powers we can take. Otherwise, I do not see how nature could have justified the accumulation of them. If we were not going somewhere, there would certainly be no need to put hindrances in our way. But hindrances are there for us to overcome as part of growth. And if we can do that and do it properly, we have a very definite advantage. So now we'll take the other end of the stick and consider the probability that we are, within a few years, going to retire. Now, a lot of people view this in itself as a certain type of calamity. It is a bewilderment. And the most common reason that is given for looking forward to retirement is because the individual is tired. They're tired of the job. They're tired of work. They're tired of responsibilities. And they sort of see that they're going to have a kind of Indian summer, a late fall full of leisure, happiness, and contentment. But no matter how old we are or what we are doing, we still have to live with ourselves. And nearly everyone reaches the retirement age with some defects of character. We do not suddenly become perfect because we become older. We only become perfect when we become wiser, when we gain more and more insights as to what life means. And if there is anyone who needs deep and correct and inspiring insights, it is the individual who is reaching advanced years. There is every reason to want to meet those years with attitudes that are constructive, happy, and useful. All these things take a certain amount of preparation. Therefore, let us assume that having come to this point in life, that we estimate what our own internal resources are. Sit down quietly and say to yourself, What am I going to do when this time comes? What am I really going to do? Am I going into a condominium? Am I going to go into a community retirement plan? Am I going to wait until there's a vacancy in some unit I have my mind on? Am I expecting to go with my children? What am I planning to do? What is it all going to be? And is there any probability that it's going to be the happy and wonderful state we've looked forward to? No one seems to be very sure about these things. But when the time comes, the individual has a tendency to be lazy. They have a tendency to say, well, I don't have to worry anymore. I can get by. I can't do much of anything. But there's not much of anything I want to do. So in these conditions, they sort of settle back and gradually rusticate into oblivion. This has not much real advantage. The individual who thought they were going to be blissfully happy isn't blissfully happy. They're bored. They're tired. They form all kinds of artificial interests to keep them busy. And these artificial interests, they know themselves are not real. Therefore, they do not do a great deal of good. Out of this also, there comes a gradual breaking down of health. The bored person, the individual without any real pattern for life, is a good candidate for early illness. They have not kept up any discipline. They have not built for the future. And as the future becomes less and less interesting, they begin to wish they were out of here already instead of waiting a few more years. There are a great many people who really wish they weren't here anymore. And that means in some mysterious way, they have managed to go down through the years and miss the meaning of life. There is something to be done that needs the doing in order to cheer these people into a more correct and constructive relationship. So the time comes and something has to be done about it. And sometimes there's ways you can go right out and do big and important things. But there are also times where much of this fullness that you search for has to be within yourself. Now, in religion, we know that the theology is acceptable to a lot of people. They believe as their parents believed. They believed as their ancestors believed. And they continue in this belief to the end of life. There is a certain strength in this believing, because at least they believe something. Whereas too many people come to these years believing nothing. They have no convictions on any reasonable subject. But in these people who are religiously inclined, they're gradually changing their attitudes toward religion. Little by little, the belief in the infallibility of theology is breaking down. We also become increasingly aware of the fact that religion is not something that can simply be communicated to us. It's not something that can be bestowed by baptism. It is something that has to develop within the person himself. In the Oriental world, there are meditational groups that meditate for divine and guidance and light. And in India, of course, there is a kind of rule that at 65 years of age, the man or woman can retire from worldliness and devote themselves to preparation for life beyond. In other words, as they were brought into the world and grew up here as children, now they are going to go to another world where they also must grow up, where they must be prepared as far as possible for a different kind of life. And this different kind of life is indicated by meditational disciplines. The individual tries to discover the identity locked within himself. He tries to equate the values that he has assembled during his years of activity. Now, of course, if he hasn't equated much, if he hasn't given it much thought along the way, he will be at a disadvantage. But even so, in these years, there is what might well be termed a period which corresponds almost to Pythagorean discipline. The individual suddenly finds that it's just as important to put his own inner life in order as it was to educate himself when he was still a child in this world. everything has to be prepared for. And in the older years, the contemplative life becomes more and more significant. It is almost inevitable that we should think about it, because we are quite certain that when we do finally depart from here, we're not going to be surrounded by warfare, we're not going to be surrounded by institutions of one kind or another, and we're not going to attend the international Minneapolis car racing. Nor are we going to watch from heavenly heights all the athletic teams and so forth, which we watch so carefully on television every day. We're going to have a different kind of world. But there must be a different kind of us inside of ourselves that can adapt to this, or we wouldn't be here in the first place. So the problem of readapting a point of view, of enlarging, mellowing, and deepening the realities of life can constitute a discipline. Now this discipline, as the Swami Vivekananda observed on one occasion, is not a meditation that is taken on for half an hour in the morning or 2 hours at night. The real discipline is the continuing realization of value all the time. And the constant exploration of experience to discover value. To see the world around us as a great symbolism, as a mass of figures and emblems bearing witness to eternal realities. This type of approach can be cultivated. It can be and must be cultivated alone. It can't be done in group form, for the growth from within out is everyone's personal journey.